Welcome, everyone, to today's Autistic Moment, a podcast for autistic adults by an autistic adult. My name is Philip King Lowe. I am the owner, producer, and host, and I am an autistic adult. Thank you so very much for listening. Today's Autistic Moment is a member of the Autistic Podcasters Network. Explore, engage, empower. Today's Autistic Moment, the podcast for intersectional autistic adult communities. This first segment of today's Autistic Moment is sponsored by the Autism Society of Minnesota, known as AUSM throughout Minnesota's autism community. As Minnesota's first autism resource for more than 50 years, AUSM serves the whole state, the whole spectrum, for the whole life. Visit AUSM at AUSM.org. Thank you for joining me for To Be Pro-Neurodiversity is to Be Anti-Racist. Jen White Johnson is my guest for this show. Please visit todaysautisticmoment.com, where you can listen to the podcast, get transcripts, program updates, and read the guest bios pages. Please visit the Future Shows page to read the titles, guests, and descriptions of all shows coming up through March. The transcripts are sponsored by Minnesota Independence College and Community. The transcripts can be read and followed from the website. There is a link provided to get access to a document form of the transcript so that you can print it so it won't use up the ink on your printer. The written document has a font that is accessible for dyslexics. While visiting the website, please consider supporting the work of Today's Autistic Moment with a financial donation or purchase a 16-ounce drinking cup and or a lapel pin with Today's Autistic Moments logo on them at the logo shop. I will be celebrating my 55th birthday on February 5th. I am holding a fundraiser for the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network as part of my birthday. When you visit todaysautisticmoment.com, go to the menu option ASON Fundraiser to read about the organization and to make a donation through my personal Facebook page. The fundraiser will be available through February 29th. Please follow Today's Autistic Moment on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Join Today's Autistic Moment community group page on Facebook for conversations and updates. Please subscribe to the YouTube channel at Today's Autistic Moment to watch any episode of Autistic Voices Roundtable Discussions celebrating intersectional autistic lives. The first episode of Autistic Voices Roundtable Discussions celebrating intersectional autistic lives in 2024 will be on Wednesday, February 21st, at 2 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time. The roundtable discussion topic will be Respect for Autistic Autonomy. Exploring the importance of autonomy for autistic individuals, our diverse panel will discuss how decisions affecting healthcare, careers, clothing, food, living conditions, and social interactions often neglect our preferences. Join us for a meaningful discussion on why respecting autistic autonomy is crucial, the role neurotypical people should be playing in fostering understanding and support. Join us on Wednesday, February 21st at 2 o'clock p.m. on the YouTube channel at Today's Autistic Moment. The show will be recorded and made available for viewers to see whenever they want to watch it. I am excited to announce that one of the new focuses of Today's Autistic Moment is highlighting the intersectionality of autistics, particularly during Black History Month. Historically, Black autistics and other neurodivergents have often been left out of the conversations surrounding disability justice and inclusion. This year on Today's Autistic Moment, I will be hosting guests and exploring other topics related to autistics and neurodivergence represented by the diverse interracial communities. In the upcoming fall episodes, I plan to feature guests who can help us recognize the experiences of Indigenous autistics and Black autistics from inner city settings. By amplifying their voices and perspectives of individuals from various backgrounds, we aim to promote a more comprehensive and inclusive understanding of autism and neurodiversity. Creating a platform like Today's Autistic Moment, which celebrates the diversity within the autistic community, is crucial for fostering solidarity, awareness, and empowerment. I am committed to making meaningful contributions to promote inclusivity and understanding. Last December, I looked at the profile of Jen White Johnson on X, formerly called Twitter, and saw her quote in the cover photo, quote, "To be pro-neurodiversity is to be anti-racist," end of quote. As I read Jen's profile, I learned that she represents several intersecting communities. Jen is disabled, neurodivergent, Black, and a Barakwa mother of an autistic child. Once I read about Jen, I wanted to invite her to come on Today's Autistic Moment to talk about her incredible quote. It needs to be said that the work of anti-racism needs to be talked about because racism is in many intersecting communities, including but not limited to the neurodiversity movement. After this first commercial break, you will hear Jen White Johnson and I talk about her quote, "To be pro-neurodiversity is to be anti-racist." Today's Autistic Moment can be downloaded and heard on most podcast apps including Apple, Google Play, Breaker, CastBox, Overcast, iHeartRadio, Pocket Casts, Radio Public, Spotify, TuneIn, Pandora, Amazon Music, Audible, Podcast Addict, Podcast Chaser. If you are looking for the transcripts, go to todaysautisticmoment.com, click on the episode you want to listen to, and follow the directions to find the transcripts. Thank you for listening to Today's Autistic Moment. Support for Today's Autistic Moment comes from Best Care Home Care Agency. Best Care offers PCA services, and your friend or family member could be your paid PCA. Best Care also offers homemaking, FMS services, and 2, 4, 5D services throughout the metro and greater Minnesota. Visit their website, bestcaremn.com, to learn more about their services. Jen White Johnson, thank you so much for being on this episode of Today's Autistic Moment to start out Black History Month. So welcome.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to, you know, just to share space with you today.
Why, thank you. Thank you. I'm so glad you're here.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So, well, this is my second Black History Month by which I've been talking about Black autistic adults, Black neurodivergence. And so, and I like, we need to do some real honest talking about how racism is affecting neurodivergence across our intersectional communities. So I'm so grateful that you're here. And it really inspired me when I looked over your Twitter X profile and saw the words to be pro-neurodiversity is to be anti-racist. And boy, that's a mouthful. And I think it would be great to just explore that question. So where can we begin to explore this understanding that to be pro-neurodiversity is to be anti-racist, and how it affects autistic adults and our intersectional communities? So go ahead and give me some answers to that question.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that statement, it's, you know, it's really a call of accountability. It's a call of action. It's a call of, you know, solidarity. I realized that words, you know, have so much power. And, you know, as we see every day with content and media, you know, like, it can definitely, you know, make or break, you know, conversations. It can influence, you know, so many people's way of thinking and reimagining. Mm-hmm. And so I knew that in 2020, specifically, you know, when a lot of folks, especially white people, let's just keep it real, they were finally open to having solidarity conversations with Black and Brown BIPOC people. And, you know, they were actually realizing that, okay, yes, Black people are being murdered, Black disabled people are being murdered, you know, constantly. This is going back, you know, decades, centuries, that this isn't necessarily a new conversation for multiply marginalized people, but in essence, it ended up being a new conversation for white people, you know, specifically to have conversations about, okay, well, what does it mean to be an anti-racist? You know, what does it mean to be, you know, pro-Black, and, or just to be, you know, pro-disability, you know, what does that really mean? And I felt, and a lot of my fellow Black disabled comrades definitely felt, that the Black disability perspective was being left out of the conversation when it came to the conversation about anti-Blackness, anti-racism, especially since, you know, Black people, multiply marginalized people, are often discouraged to, you know, disclose their disability out of, you know, thinking that it's, you know, this clinical, you know, marred and scarred way of existing that you should never talk about, that you should never, you know, hold space for. And, you know, just, I mean, being able to have some really thoughtful conversations with a lot of, you know, Black disabled comrades, like, you know, Imani, you know, Barbarian, and, you know, Leroy Moore from like Crip Hop Nation, and just a lot of really amazing Black disabled voices who are very unapologetic in terms of their stance when it comes to how much Black people, Black disabled people, need to take up space unapologetically. Voices, you know, like T.L. Lewis, you know, like, you know, Lydia Brown, and, you know, folks who were definitely inspiring me and encouraging me to be more spoken to be more well-read about Black disability, about BIPOC disability culture. You know, friends like my autistic friend, like John Marble from Pivot Diversity. And so folks that really wanted to be able to have really great conversations about, okay, well, we're all disabled, we're all neurodivergent, but our perspectives, our voices are constantly being erased in the conversation of anti-racism. So whose voices are being erased, whose voices are being left out of the cultural conversation? And what does that really mean for all of us? What does that mean for advocacy culture, you know, like performative allyship, you know, all of these things where, you know, all of those folks, their voices were taking up so much more space in 2020, whereas the Black disabled voice and just the disabled voice period was I felt being erased. And when you're looking at, you know, the data, you know, when you're looking at having conversations about, you know, how it's still legal, you know, to pay disabled people sub-minimum wages, you know, how it's still an issue when it comes to police state sanctioned violence, you know, that, you know, disabled folks, especially Black disabled folks, are often, you know, arrested while they're still in their early 20s, just because of, you know, the inequities when it comes to understanding, you know, disability and how that intersects with racism and violence and crime, and, you know, and how a lot of space just really isn't held, you know, for that perspective. And so I knew that if we're talking about being pro-disability, pro-neurodiversity, in essence, like, that's the key of this anti-racism conversation, specifically just because of Black voices, you know, people of color, like, specifically are just being left out. So it was just that statement just really came from really fruitful conversations that I had had with my fellow disabled comrades about, you know, okay, so, like, you know, how can we take words and how can we take, you know, language justice and specifically, like, our language, you know, disability infused language, and how can we, you know, say something that is truth and that's fact and that people need to be brought to, you know, basically, you know, like Alice Wong and the Society of Disabled Oracles, like making sure that disabled folks are the authority when it comes to having conversations on, you know, marginalization and racism. Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk specifically though about the neurodiversity movement, especially autistics and ADHD, dyslexics, and dyspraxics and many others. You know, we are all, of course, part of the disability community as a whole. Don't want to diminish that, but especially with Black people who are affected by misinformation and stereotypes, and of course, diagnostic criteria, which is, you know, really written for. I've said this with Precious Leslie, and Precious Leslie is coming on next show to talk about education, healthcare, and education disparities for Black autistic adults. But, you know, but I want to hear from you, because you have an autistic son, am I correct?
Yes.
And you are ADHD yourself. So I want us to talk about how this, how you feel anyway, what you have to say about how this is impacting Black neurodivergent people. So let's talk about that.
I think it's definitely impacting us from, you know, the space of compliance, and how if we aren't compliant to, you know, how we navigate, you know, our role in academia, or how we navigate our role in, you know, in the economy, how we navigate our role in employment and in school, we're often, you know, kind of othered, and we're kind of put in this kind of separate space of, all right, well, you know, we don't necessarily understand your way of existing and your way of living. So either we're going to ignore like your accessibility needs and your needs for accommodation, you know, or we're just going to make you work even harder to quote unquote, like normalize yourself. And so, you know, we're spending the majority of our time, you know, masking like our neurodivergence and masking our disability. And it just, it, you know, it becomes more laborious for us. And if you're Black, you know, if you're Latino, if you're, you know, if you're just a person of color, then we're literally marginalized, you know, even more. And like, I recently, you know, came upon a letter that I had written to my mom and dad when I was in the second or third grade. And I'm going to read it because my mom actually, sent it to me on my birthday, actually. Like she had it, like I just turned 43 in December, and she's been digging, because I've been very open about my ADHD journey to my mom and dad, you know, because I'm late diagnosed, and, you know, been trying to explain to them, look, like, I've always been this way. And I've always, I always knew that, you know, that there was something really unique and eccentric about me. But we know that neurodivergency often looks different in women, in Black girls. And so I wasn't, you know, folks like me, especially in the 80s and the 90s growing up, we weren't necessarily on the radar for being, you know, for having, for being neurodivergent. But she's been sending me things that kind of give me clues, and that kind of give me a little bit of insight into how much I was masking when I was a kid, in terms of like my ADHD, and how I was always trying to be the good little girl, the good little Black girl, you know, so that I can be respected and be taken seriously. And the letter, it says, "Dear Mrs. Yeaman, I know I'm bad all the time, and I do not do good in math, and I'm a talking girl, and you do not like me. I talk a lot. You like me, right? Right, you do? This is literally what I'm saying in this letter. Don't you? And I always have a billion questions, and I always have like a billion S's on my report cards. And so the S's, you know, they stand for satisfactory. So in other words, like I was just getting by like with grades, like in elementary school. So I always equated that to there's something wrong with me, you know? And so I tell her, I go on to tell her, next year I will do better. I promise. I'll do my work. And you know why I'm writing this, because I might be in your class next year. So the letter stops there. And then I have like a picture of a smiley face, which is like her in front of the class. And then all of these students are like kind of like surrounding her, and they all have smiles on them, on their faces. And I sign it like your friend, Jennifer. And I literally, like, I was like, I started crying like heavily when I read this. And I don't think my mom like really knew what the letter was going to do to me, but the fact that, you know, I've only really been talking about my ADHD like since, like, you know, I've, you know, since adulthood, obviously, but I've spent like the majority of my early 40s like backtracking like all of like these behavioral like differences and all of these like bits and pieces of you know, just, again, information and eccentricities that I like clearly were like crying for help and to be understood. And so this is like one of like the earliest like documented things, like evidence that I have of, you know, me as an ADHD kid, like me, who knows, as an undiagnosed autistic kid, like reaching out for that validation, right? Reaching out for acceptance, reaching out for community, and being very like articulate and unapologetic about it. Like, so it's like, I'm calling myself out, right? Because we're taught as kids, you know, like, well, if you get bad grades and if you talk a lot, like there must be something wrong with you, right? But then I'm also trying to hold her accountable by saying, but you like me, right? Like, you still like me, right? Because in my mind, I was thinking, well, this is who I am, and it's still your and it's still your responsibility to accept me as me, you know?
Right.
So yeah. I think it's like, I think it's so interesting how, like, from an early age, I was like still trying to like advocate, you know, in the best way that I knew how, like, as a neurodivergent kid. And so like, that's really where we are as like Black neurodivergent people as a culture. We're like constantly seeking out like acceptance, that validation, to be taken seriously, to be like leaders, to be people that are sought out before like white neurodivergent or white disabled voices, you know, because we have like, we understand like what it's like to live every day, you know, wearing a mask, to be multi, you know, just to kind of like exist in this space of, you know, of being looked at from a very inferior, you know.
Yeah. That's all extremely interesting. Now I want to kind of emphasize here that, you know, I am part of the white majority in this country, and there's so much about Black autistics and other neurodivergence that I'm not totally aware of or understood. Can you explain a little bit more in detail about how a lot of the diagnostic criteria is whitewashed for all presents? Can you kind of talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, now I'm not like a clinician or a doctor or anything, but I mean, from my lived experience, as I had mentioned, it can be whitewashed to a certain degree where Black folks, especially Black disabled folks and neurodivergent folks, are often, you know, very much, you know, demonized. Or we are subjected to like adultification, you know, so that if we are experiencing any sense of like bullying or discrimination in the workplace or in the classroom, you know, which is where I tend to work as an educator, you know, we're often very much viewed as, okay, well, stay in your lane. You know, it's not always about race. You know, even though majority of the data, and, you know, especially in the 80s and 90s, was always very much, you know, okay, well, this is the research that we've done on autism, which centers and singularizes autism to be like, you know, a white condition that impacts, you know, like young white boys. And it was very much the same. It was very much the same with ADHD. And what I'm saying is like nothing new. This is like a very standard talking point that you would hear any other, you know, Black disabled advocate say. So, you know, as a woman, you know, I'm not necessarily on the radar for the conversations on neurodiversity, you know, because, again, like, I've had to project and I've had to very much showcase and highlight myself as, quote unquote, like, I got this, you know, like, like, I'm fine, versus no, like, I need help and I need assistance and I need accommodations and I need more time. I need flexibility, you know, like, I need, you know, I deal with neuro fatigue, you know? And so, so what happens is that when things are whitewashed, we have a lot more, you know, white publications or white folks, you know, white autistic folks getting more grant funding or they have access to more resources or access to more education, access to more, you know, degrees. And, you know, whereas, you know, Black folks are like, you know, firstly, like, we're dealing with like late diagnoses. And then when it comes to what we publish and how much we publish and how much support that we get, there's often very like few autism based celebratory books and cultural conversations that tend to be led by Black, like, you know, Black disabled and Black neurodivergent folks.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And this is one of those places where I do want to point to the Autistic Women and Non-Binary Network that mm-hmm. is really working to address the issues of race in that exactly. particular organization. Yeah.
But, yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah.
And right. And so when I was first, you know, when I first started to have like these like internal conversations with myself about neurodivergency, yeah, you know, like Morenike and like Lydia Brown and, you know, TL Lewis, like those were a lot of the like the first, you know, and of course, you know, Kayla Smith as well, a lot of really beautiful voices that I learned early on, like, okay, I need to just wrap myself up in like their language, in their cultural amplification when it comes to amplifying, you know, Black women and like Black, you know, like non-binary, you know, humans, and versus, you know, like leaning more towards the conversation of, oh, you know, autism is burdensome and we should work to eradicate it altogether. So whether it's, you know, the Autistic Binary Network, whether it's, you know, Carrie Gray and like the Named Advocates and, you know, all these really beautiful spaces that really help to, you know, amplify. And then even early on with like Taylor McGee and like the Black Disability Justice Collective, you know, and I would often read Taylor's words, and sadly Taylor's no longer with us. But Taylor, you know, like as an autistic person, it was really beautiful to read their words and to be so inspired by, you know, the work that they were doing in, you know, Minnesota. And so that was also a collective that I followed, you know, early on in like my neurodivergent, you know, journey. And it's like, okay, so, you know, one less way that we can whitewash, you know, neurodiversity is to follow what BIPOC folks are having to say and what they're publishing and what they're reading and the organizations that they are a part of. And of course, like the joyful amplificatory messages that they're constantly, you know, highlighting, you know.
After this next commercial break, Jen and I will further discuss many of the interracial individuals within the neurodiversity movement and how autistic adults can become engaged and empowered to impact the conversations around racism and disability justice.
Support comes from Minnesota Independence College and Community, a life and career skills program for young adults with autism and learning differences. Help a young adult take a step towards their independence and a vibrant life. Learn more at miccommunity.org.
Does it feel like all your support systems are in separate silos? Does it seem like there are mixed messages and you don't know which way to turn? Being part of a system is hard. It would be helpful to have the tools in your life toolbox to help navigate those silos. Looking Forward Life Coaching can provide support to fill that toolbox to prepare you to bridge those silos. Being person-centered, Looking Forward Life Coaching equips an individual to advocate for their needs. With coaching one-on-one, bridging the gap between the silos of services, you can feel more confident that your needs and desires are met. If you would like more information or would like to schedule a free meet and greet, please visit our website at www.lookingforwardlc.org or call us at 612-504-7414. Looking Forward Life Coaching helps change stumbling blocks of life into stepping stones towards success.
Today's episode is brought to you by Matthew, the hashtag Actually Autistic Coach. If you're an autistic adult seeking support, or a friend, family member looking to better understand and assist autistic adults, Matthew is your go-to resource. As a seasoned teacher, consultant, and mentor, Matthew is dedicated to empowering the autistic community. He offers free support groups for autistic adults, educational workshops, and online meditation circles for mindfulness. For organizations, Matthew provides specialized training sessions on inclusivity. With over 15 years of mentoring autistic entrepreneurs, he offers personalized one-on-one coaching, guiding individuals to start businesses, manage careers, and build healthy relationships while embracing their authentic autistic selves. Matthew believes in thriving, not just surviving. Visit theautisticcoach.com today for a more empowered future. I want to move into my second question here. How can we engage the intersectional autistic adult communities regarding to be pro-neurodiversity is to be anti-racist? Let's talk about, let's spend some time here talking about how can we get, you know, when I talk about autistic adults, of course, that's my purpose for today's autistic moment. But, you know, when I talk about the intersection here, and this is for you as well as for my audience, I'm talking about the other neurodivergence that we intersect with, including people who are ADHD, who are dyslexic or also dyspraxic, or some of the other ways that neurodivergence is part of our communities. But we also want to talk about, because as we've said, the neurodiversity movement has been whitewashed to the point where we, a lot of us who are white, are not really listening to a lot of the racial diversity voices that we need to be hearing. And including in our conversations and in our reading, in our literature, and in some of our surveys and so on and so forth. And I want to start by, I want to finish up my question for a minute here, Jen Johnson. Jen, sorry. But the thing is, I want to emphasize here is that the best way that we're going to learn how to bring all of these communities together is by listening to one another's story about what these things are like for us. With that in mind, and I know I put a lot of stuff in there, but that's my job. but yeah, let's talk about engaging, and let's talk about how we can, once again, I talk a little bit more about, you know, getting neurodivergence involved in the work of neurodiversity and racism activism and that sort of thing. So go ahead and give us your talks on that.
Yeah. I mean, again, and I'm always going to point towards, you know, BIPOC disabled folks that are very much already, you know, doing this work. And one of my favorite things to cite is, you know, of course, like Disability Visibility, you know, by Alice Wong. And because, you know, Alice has such a really beautiful just method to bring so many voices together, and to hold space for, you know, like you said, like the intersection of so many disabled voices, from literally like the entire spectrum of disability, because, you know, physically disabled folks, you know, often are like dealing with different aspects of like neurodivergence, mm-hmm. Especially when it comes to, you know, ADHD and autism. And so, you know, early on, you know, in addition to following, you know, a whole bunch of voices like Kayla Smith and Timotheus, you know, like Alice was reminding me, and Alice is like, yeah, you know, don't forget, like, in my disability visibility book, like, I have, you know, essays by so many beautiful, like, neurodivergent folks. And I really loved, and I have the book in front of me, and I'm trying to find, like, I know that Timotheus was, like, on her podcast. And, you know, he talked so much, as well as Kayla did, about, you know, Black autistic joy. And, you know, they were having those conversations as, you know, Black autistic adults. And I feel like that was the conversation, and just the statement that I felt like, you know, was missing, from, you know, so when we're talking about the intersections of disability and neuro, like, diversity, and when it comes to, hey, like, so we have like these different ways of expressing ourselves. We have like these really, you know, interesting aspects of identity and the ways that we communicate and the ways that we create as neurodivergent people. And it's really up to us to not perpetuate these systems of ableism and of negativity, and that often, you know, showcase that intersection of, okay, well, if you're autistic and you have ADHD, like, how the heck do you even manage? Like, how the heck do you even, you know, how are you even respected or taken seriously, you know, as like an educator or as an artist or as an advocate? But in essence, you know, intersecting between multiple different, like, neurodivergent tendencies, like, it makes me, I feel like it makes me a better artist, and it makes me a better parent and a better friend and a better advocate to my community, because I'm able to speak so many languages, and I'm able to, like, to hold space for so many different, you know, for those intersections, you know, because, like Audre Lorde said, you know, we don't live single issue lives. And so whether I'm dealing with aspects of anxiety, you know, coupled with ADHD, coupled with, you know, undiagnosed autism, and then also coupled with, you know, parenting an ADHD autistic kid, you know, and it's like, you know, it's like those are intersections that I'm constantly living every single day, and I'm holding space for those intersections and realizing that, okay, well, you know, because I have like dyscalculia, like, word, oh my god, numbers, and like, they jumble, like, literally, like, I can't, like, it's like, and the older I get, the worse it gets in terms of me being able to, like, pick apart formulas and do math quickly, and it continues, and it's something that I always struggled with as a kid, but of course, you know, I never knew what to call it, and so, but in essence, that allows for me, it's like, okay, well, if it's difficult for me to work in numbers, then maybe I can work in colors, or I can work in shapes, or I can work, you know, maybe through music a little bit better, mm-hmm. or the way that I hear the way that I hear sounds. And so, I've really leaned on art, like my art and my design, to really help to tell, like, those stories about intersection. So whether it's designing, you know, a cool sticker that says, you know, create more anti-ableist spaces, or little mini booklets and zines and posters that, say Autistic Joy or Amplified Black Disabled Lives. It's like making sure that the words that I'm using instantly are able to identify, hey, like I'm Black and I have a disability, and that's the intersection, you know, right there. Like I can be like those two, I can be those two things, and I can celebrate those two things. I can celebrate, you know, Black and being neurodivergent and being Black and being disabled. And I can celebrate, you know, those cultures. And, but when I do it, I'm going to like hyper-focus and everything's going to be like super colorful and super vibrant and super like, you know, super quirky. And because that is the only way that I know how to express myself. And plus, like, I know that going, being super extra and super joyful and playful, that's going to resonate the most like with my audience, because I know that that's, you know, what they love. And that's a stigma. Like most of my autistic friends and artists that I love are like extremely colorful, like, you know, Amina Mucciolo and like Doodle Cats and like all of these folks that create stickers and apparel and, you know, like liberatory messages of calls to action, like with their design work. It's all like, it involves like every single color on the color wheel. It's like a full spectrum of joy. And I'm like, yes, like, that's what I want. Like, give me all the colors, like give me all of it, because we all know it's difficult as an autistic person or a neurodivergent person, at least for me, my lived experience, to just pick one thing, because like I love so much of everything, and I feel like I shouldn't have to be penalized for wanting to love everything. And that's exactly, and that's what intersection, it means, it's embracing all of it and embracing the multiple languages, the multiple identities that we have.
Yeah. Absolutely. And and one of the things that I have come to believe as a matter of personal conviction is that regardless of what one's sexual orientation is, all of us, autistics, neurodivergence, we are all in one way or another gender nonconforming.
Yes.
because yeah, just the way our brains work and our bodies respond to whatever's going on, it's all very unique. So if you're looking for a group of people to fit into the stereotypes of certain genders, don't look for it among the neurodivergent communities. Not at all.
No.
So what I hear you saying, and please correct me if I'm mistaken here, is that part of engaging ourselves is simply by recognizing our unique and our similar strengths and our identities, you know, recognizing our interconnectedness with, you know, being autistic, being neurodivergent, and then also with all of these multiply different cultures that we're seeing. You know, we're seeing more cultural diversity within the neurodivergent movement. In fact, one of the things I am going to do next fall is I am going to talk a lot more, a little bit about the indigenous communities and that sort of thing.
As well as,
you know, we're going to be taking a look at, you know, the Black gender non-binary experience as well. So does that sound like what you're trying to talk about?
Yeah, I mean, just being kind of open and embracing that, you know, like you said, that, you know, it's okay to just exist. So whether that is existing as, you know, a two-spirit person, whether that's existing within, you know, a non-binary space where you don't conform to one gender, or or maybe like for me, like I'm she, they, because I want to be able to like hold space for that other aspect of my whatever, you know, like, you know, like I just want to be able to hold space for it. But I definitely respect, and I've, you know, yeah. And it took me, you know, a while, to feel comfortable, you know, doing that. But then I also felt like I wanted to be, you know, like, and clear, you know, like, you know, solidarity. But, you know, it's really beautiful because, you know, you were talking about like Indigenous folks, and I really love, you know, we've been hearing so much about Lily Gladstone, obviously, you know, with, you know, Killers of a Flower Moon and the role that she played. And she's been very, you know, she also goes by they. So she, they, both pronouns, just like me. And it's like, she's been one of the things that I've been really comforted in, like when I'm reading articles, that she's been very open about talking about, you know, like, you know, people like who were Two-Spirit, and being able to kind of shed light that in most native languages that there are, you know, no gendered pronouns, you know. And I know that like Jen Dierenwater is like another really great person to speak on about this as well. So if you want to be able to like talk about like Two-Spirit, you know, like Indigenous voices, disabled voices, like Jen would be amazing to have on the podcast as well. But yeah, like so just realizing, you know, that yeah, like the fact that there are languages that don't even really have like a he or a she. It's just like there's just they, like you just exist as a beautiful human, and that's good enough. You know?
Yeah.
After this final commercial break, Jen and I will talk about the importance of listening to the voices of neurodivergents regarding disability justice, racial inclusion, and avoiding conditional acceptance. Today's Autistic Community Bulletin Board will immediately follow the conclusion of our conversation.
Hello, autism community. My name is Lisa Morgan. I'm an autistic adult too, and I know firsthand what it feels like to be unintentionally harmed by well-meaning professionals when reaching out for help. My passion is to help autistic people find and use their own unique strengths to help themselves. Are you rule-based, a literal thinker, have a focused interest? Let's figure out together how to use the strengths of autism to find solutions. I offer life coaching for autistic adults and individualized workshops for professionals. To find out more, go to autismcrisissupport.com.
The next episode for Black History Month will be on February 18th. Precious Leslie returns to Today's Autistic Moment for education and healthcare disparities for Black autistic adults. Precious Leslie will explore the intricate intersectionality of race, gender, and socioeconomic status in the experience of Black autistic adults, specifically within the realms of education and healthcare. Today's Autistic Moment will recognize Women's History Month beginning on March 3rd with the show Education for Autistic Women. Karen Tim, an educator in Canada, will be my guest to discuss how the misinformation about autistic women place them at a terrible disadvantage when it comes to education. We will talk about the learning needs of autistic women and what we can do to advocate for their equitable access to education. On March 17th, Michelle Markman comes back to Today's Autistic Moment for the show Autistic Pioneers, Unearthing the Female Architects of Discovery. The history of autism is blurred due to the lack of recognition of the many autistic women
who are part of the autism story. Michelle joins me to name and talk about the many autistic women and their contributions to where we are now. Check out the future shows page on todaysautisticmoment.com for all upcoming shows and guests. If you would like to offer to be a guest on Today's Autistic Moment, go to the Be My Guest page on todaysautisticmoment.com to fill out the guest intake form. If you have any topic suggestions, please go to the Contact Us page and submit your ideas. Thank you for listening to Today's Autistic Moment. Well, now that we have explored this topic and talked about how we can get the intersectional autistic adult communities engaged, how can we empower autistic adults to discover their strengths and use them as we talk about to be pro-neurodiversity is to be anti-racism? How can we empower them to get involved, to become part of the work towards? And this is where I say to our autistic community and many others that part of how you become empowered and among the ways that you become engaged is, I've said this multiple times, but it's worth repeating. You must know your brand, make and model of autism or whatever your neurodivergence is, and you must be, you must tell your stories about what being parts of these communities mean for you, whether that's through arts, whether that's through music, whether that's through what you write, it's what you, you know, how you express yourself, or however it works for you. That's one of those ways that we start to change the conversation. But I also want to talk a little bit about, there's been some conversation in the past that part of the reason why we're not dealing with the issue of race very easily, there's two reasons. Number one, it's hard for people of various races to talk about them because of the discrimination and violence they've experienced from the white majority movements. And then the white folks don't want to get involved because it makes them angry about, you know, or they go back to their stereotypical understandings of Black people, which is also unfortunate. But one of the reasons I am doing these programs during Black History Month and in various other parts of the year, because until we, including myself as a white male, I may be gay, but I'm still a white male, mm-hmm. and an autistic person, until we give our Black autistic, our Black disabled, our Black neurodivergent people a chance to tell what's happening to them and how it impacts them, it's going to be difficult for us to get into these conversations. Because unfortunately, when a lot of Black people start to talk about their story, unfortunately, their voices are silenced and spoken over. And what I want to do, especially with this new framework of explore, engage, empower, is that we're actually going to listen. We're not going to silence or speak over these voices. We're going to let them speak. Mm-hmm. So I know that's a lot. I pack a lot into there, but let's talk about getting them empowered. So I'll let you talk now.
Yeah, I mean, I think you said it well in terms of, you know, making sure that we're not silenced, you know, making sure that we're not spoken over. You know, it's clear that, you know, folks who have, you know, maybe more of a quote unquote following, or, you know, they're more visible, sometimes are viewed as the, you know, quote unquote experts, you know, because, you know, oh, like they've published, and because, you know, like I said, they have, you know, more degrees, or maybe because, you know, they, again, you know, have more access to resources to share, their, you know, their overall agenda. And so that, right, that leads, you know, BIPOC, you know, voices and queer voices and multiply marginalized voices, you know, like you said, to be erased. And then so what ends up happening is, you know, Black folks are, and folks of color are, like, literally tasked with the labor of, all right, okay, so then how do we create the change, you know, that we want to see? You know, how do we, you know, I feel like we already are, like, the change, you know, because we've been able to, you know, endure so much ableism, discrimination, racism, you know, so we are the change, you know, just for existing, you know, just for, you know, being vocal about our struggles, that, right, that are not divisive, like, you know, CRT, you know, critical race theory, and disability critical race theory, you know, discrit, like, it's not divisive, it's, you know, it's empowering, you know, like you said, like, it's allowing for, you know, disabled folks and neurodivergent folks to be the leaders of these spaces and the leaders of these conversations. So yeah, it just means that we have to be able to create more to empower more. So that graphic, like, to be pro neurodiversity is to be anti-racist, that wasn't tied to, like, a specific organization. It wasn't a commission-based piece, you know, no one paid me to do that. That was just something that, again, it was like a solidarity statement, and me using my training as a graphic designer, as an artist, and that's just kind of the voice that literally is just the voice that I'm most comfortable using, expressing my disability, like my neurodivergency, you know, like, literally, like, that's the voice that has just kept me the most safe, because it's art. And, you know, most people respond to, when they don't want to accept your words, or when they don't want to accept, you know, you protesting and you know, speaking loudly, like, oh, they'll, like, art is sometimes can be digestible enough. It can definitely get you shadow banned for sure when it's like, you know, as it has me, you know, like I said, you know, like, I think that if I was to post this graphic now, like, to be pro neurodiversity is to be anti-racist, oh, like, the minute that someone sees anti-racist, like, they'll instantly, who knows, like, they'll report it. But in 2020, no, it was almost very acceptable language to amplify and to highlight, you know, at a time when social media was like, okay, well, we'll allow it, you know. Now it's like, oh my God, you know, it's just like, God forbid, like, we actually, you know, say things that even incorporate the word decolonization and, you know, anti-ableism and anti-racism, and, you know, because instantly that's viewed as very threatening, divisive language, you know. But in essence, we know that it's no, like, that's just the language that we use that is going to empower us, because we are unapologetic. Like, to me, like, that's what language justice is. It's making sure that the words, the language that we use is visible and that it's out there, and that we actually name it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And yeah. Let me ask you a question that's kind of burning. It's a little bit of a last minute one for Anya, so I apologize. But, you know, I've had conversations last year with Precious Leslie, and I probably will again. But there's also the matter of, quote, conditional acceptance Basically, you know, we accept for the period of time, and then it's like we brush off, and it's if we never had the conversation. Do you have any ideas about how we can move past conditional acceptance and make it real, make it tangible, palpable?
Yeah, I mean, definitely conditional acceptance. I mean, it's that's like a really interesting pairing of words, because right, it's like, you know, again, you know, a lot of Black and like Latin kids, because I'm, you know, Black and Puerto Rican, so I can speak from both perspectives, you know, right, like the condition on accepting your disability is that you're going to do everything that you can to quote unquote overcome it, you know?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
You know, that you're going to try your best and you're going to try as hard as you can, you know, to comply, to comply, to follow the rules, to stay in your lane, to, you know, appear as normal as possible, to get out there, be like an asset to society, get a job, you know, and, you know, be all that, you know, that you can be. And, but it's like, wait, but I still have, but I'm still neurodivergent, and I'm not going to advocate to fix myself or to cure myself. Like, I'm not trying to overcome anything. Like, all I'm trying to overcome is capitalism and ableism and, right, you know, and discrimination and racism. So why should I have to accept myself based on these specific conditions?
You know, exactly.
Like, so when I hear that statement, like, that's ultimately like what comes to mind. And so, right, like, we're like, it's unconditional acceptance. It, you know, like, that's how I would rather, you know, articulate it for me, especially as I'm a parent and I'm like, I have to wake up every day to take care of a little person. I'm like a little human that I want that I want to love unconditionally, whether it's conversations that I have with my friends or with my students. And I'm like, I want to be able to like take care of you or to love you unconditionally. You know, I want to accept you unconditionally. Not, this isn't a transactional relationship, you know, where this isn't gonna, oh, I can't, you know, this isn't gonna work, you know, only if like I can get something from you, if you can just give me something, you know?
Right.
Like, we can only be friends, or I can only have you in my life based on these conditions. You know, so yeah.
Well, Jen, this has been a fascinating conversation. Wow. Before we conclude this, do you have any resources you might encourage some folks to reach out to?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, like, I have a website, jenwhitejohnson.com, where I'm constantly sharing, you know, like my art, and I have tons of resources on there that can be downloaded for free, such as the Anti-Ableist Art Educators Manifesto, which is just a PDF that you can download and you can print it, and or it's like, or I have like a social media graphic too that you can post online and share in solidarity, and it's it's specifically geared towards, you know, how art educators that are disabled and also non-disabled can show up for their students, show up for, whether you're teaching in a classroom or whether you're teaching, you know, like at a community center, or whether, you know, whether you're, you know, in spaces of advocacy and you are interacting on a daily basis, or you're just interacting at some point with, you know, disabled folks, and it's like how to show up and how to be an anti-ableist, you know, so like I have 9 rules, you know, 9 principles, and that really just are meant to, again, like statements of solidarity on how we can come together using art to, again, show up. I feel like that's the first step. So whether you're showing up, you know, financially, whether you're showing up in support, whether you're showing up in solidarity through, you know, like, you know, reposting, or, you know, like having a conversation, a phone call, I mean, or letting students specifically, create like without limitations, and being able to, again, like one of the questions that I get a lot of is, you know, oh, well, you know, am I allowed to like talk about my disability, like in my work? And I'm like, if you're comfortable and if that's what your heart is telling you, sure. You know, like, because there's a lot of folks that can really identify and they'll resonate with the way that you want to communicate. And so folks are often, they're taken aback how I can create a sticker design that says that that's using the words autistic and joy together. And they're like, wow, like I've never, you know, seen like, you know, a design that uses those two words together that is being specifically used to amplify like my own like autistic joy. Like that's wow, you know. And it's so yeah, so it's just resources like that. And I also have links to my shop where you can get like fun stuff, t-shirts and sticker designs, and that again, that holds space for disability joy and celebratory messages, since it's so rare that you know, Black disabled artists are actually out there, you know, making things that help to embrace our disability. And yeah, and then I have information about like zine workshops that I do, and you know, holding space for disability justice and, you know, disability history. And so yeah, I just have a whole bunch of fun stuff on there. So yeah.
Good.
And then of course I'm on social media, on Instagram.
Yeah. Well, do send those resources to me, and I will make sure they get onto my Adult Autism Resources links page so that people can access them. So yeah, send them along. Jen White Johnson, thank you so much for this wonderful conversation. I am so glad you came on and shared all this with us today. I hope this has been a good experience for you. And I definitely want to definitely celebrate all this with you. So, Jen, thank you so much for being on today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And thank you all for listening.
Today's Autistic Community Bulletin Board. All of these events with their links can be found at todaysautisticmoment.com/bulletin board. Join the Autism Society of Minnesota for the Adult Coffee Club. The next coffee clubs will be on Tuesday nights from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Dogwood Coffee in St. Paul on February 6th, March 5th, April 2nd, May 7th, and June 4th. Please RSVP at ausm.org. Understanding Autism virtual classes will be offered by the Autism Society of Minnesota. These classes are perfect for autistic individuals, caregivers, those who want to understand the basics of autism and support autistic people. Classes will be on February 12th from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. and April 8th from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Classes are free of charge, but you must register to attend. On Tuesday, February 20th, beginning at 7 to 8:30 p.m., there will be a workshop at the Autism Society of Minnesota called Learning to Drive While Autistic, presented by Kathy Woods. Register for Part 2 of Language Development in Neurodivergent and Other Gestalt Language Processors with March Blank on March 7th, 2024, beginning at 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. This is the second part of the workshop that was held on December 7th of last year. Registration is now open to attend the Minnesota Autism Conference to be held on April 17th through the 19th at the Hilton DoubleTree Hotel, located at 2020 American Boulevard East in Bloomington, Minnesota. Keynote speakers include Dr. Paula Kluth and Dr. Devin Price. Go to ausm.org to get more information about these and other social and educational events, including your opportunity to enter the lottery for awesome summer camps at the Autism Society of Minnesota. Min Neurodivergent is a social club rooted in a vision of bringing neurodivergent Minnesotans together to build meaningful connections. Its core principle is to foster an environment where all are treated with dignity and respect, regardless of ability or preferences. Go to the bulletin board at todaysautisticmoment.com and click on the meetup link to become a member and attend their events. Today's Autistic Moment is here because of the generosity of supporters and sponsors. Please join the supporters by clicking on Support Today's Autistic Moment on todaysautisticmoment.com. If you work for a company and or organization that supports autistic adults and the movement for neurodiversity, I would love to have you sponsor ads on the show. If you would like to sponsor an ad and or have questions about Today's Autistic Moment, please send an email to todaysautisticmoment@gmail.com. Thank you for listening to Today's Autistic Moment, a podcast for autistic adults by an autistic adult. May you have an autistically amazing day. All of the guests meet with me on Zoom to record the interviews. The podcast is created and prepared on Spotify for Podcasters. The music that you hear is licensed to Today's Autistic Moment by PremiumBeat.com.